sitting at my table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. Protection.
Fairness.
Fair trial.
Right.
Well.
Peace.
Losers.
This is my mistake, let me make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
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 Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Focus.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solidarity.
Responsibility.
Fill in the mortar. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on SaskTel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service at channel 700. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, The Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings with my co-host Atenda Chikukwa, and today we are joined by Jolie Big Eagle, who is the owner of the Tatanka Boutique.
Tatanka Boutique.
Tomato, tomato. Okay.
Didn't you see Dances with Wolves? No?
I did, actually.
Tatanka.
Okay. All right. And I've actually been there, bought the T-shirt. And tell us about it. Like, right?
You opened a year ago, right?
Yeah.
Well, we actually opened April of 2013, and it was an idea that my husband and I had been talking about because we're both entrepreneurs, and so it actually came from a baby boutique idea that we had, and the baby boutique would be all First Nations made. Clothing, moccasins, star blankets, toys, and then we thought, well, we should take it a step up and have, you know, not just the baby items, but have it for the art and have the jewelry and clothing, the mukluks, the moccasins, and basically, you know, honoring traditional art as well as contemporary art and just having a wide range of artists from all over. But our focus has been primarily Saskatchewan First Nations and Métis artists and showcasing the various styles of artists from mostly from Saskatchewan.
Let's back up here just a little bit and kind of tell us where you're from, what your background is. You and your husband are basically professional people.
Yes.
I mean,
well, my professional background is engineering. I'm a civil engineer, and got my degree from the University of Calgary. But I also have a mathematics degree from the First Nations University of Canada back when it was SIFC. Mm-hmm. And so, but I'm also an artist and a fashion designer. I paint and create. My husband owns his own IT company, and he has a background in IT and project management, or IT is information technology, computers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we're both entrepreneurs. We have many business ideas, and this is the one that was put forth that came out of fruition the quickest.
Oh. And in your spare time.
Oh, and in my spare time, I work at Sask Energy.
Right.
And full time, and I manage the boutique on the side. But mm-hmm. my son, Wade Begeagle, mm-hmm. who's listening right now, runs the day-to-day management of the boutique.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting concept. There are galleries, public and private, in the city. But I guess the thing that sets your gallery apart is the emphasis on First Nations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, it's definitely, it was deemed a risky business idea just mm-hmm. because there is no, in terms of statistics, there mm-hmm. are no statistics anywhere when you do your research for your business plan.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing specific First Nations or Métis mm-hmm. art. Or jewelry, clothing, anything just designated as First Nations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we're actually categorized under the business coding as kind of gifts, novelties, and souvenirs.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's so, you know, that's, it's,
it
we're a little different, but, you know, so, well, I mean, we're definitely, I think we're a big difference mm-hmm. than, say, a bizarre novelty.
Mm-hmm.
So when we started our business plan, you know, we were deemed risky just because mm-hmm. you know, there was no information on how a business would succeed,
mm-hmm.
you know, who our customers would be, mm-hmm. what kind of revenue we would generate. So we've
This is the bank that's doing the deeming here?
The bank. We have two supporters, Saskatchewan Indian Equity Foundation, mm-hmm. and as well as the Women's Entrepreneurs of Saskatchewan. They're two of our financial supporters that helped us with some startup funds.
Okay.
So, yeah, I had
so
to do...
So more sort of traditional funding sources weren't interested?
Well, not for the
or
loan.
They weren't excited.
The loan that we, the amount that we wanted, we didn't mm-hmm. want to... We weren't interested in going bankrupt just to open a business. So, mm-hmm. you know, we started small and
mm-hmm.
we opened with, you know, just some of our own equity as mm-hmm. well as the financing that mm-hmm. we could secure. So we did go to the bank, but we weren't seeking enough money from the bank for them to deem us a proper client.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you weren't asking for enough money as far as they're concerned,
okay. Yeah. So they wanted us to get more money, and we didn't want to, you mm-hmm. know, go into that much debt.
Right.
So then we went after the looking after funding from the Women's Entrepreneurs
mm-hmm.
and Saskatchewan Indian Equity Foundation.
So I guess mm-hmm. we could sort of refer to that kind of financing as more patient financing.
Yeah,
smart.
There's definitely
patient money.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's definitely some incentives to seek it out from those two groups because they have a vested interest for us to be
sure.
successful,
mm-hmm.
not just because of the repaying the loan, but because you know both of their mandates are to support local entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
and then of
mm-hmm.
course you're putting the culture out front and center as well, so they're. Not only are they supporting you from a financial point of view, but it's going to be kind of a more educational type of thing for the people around who come in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I've learned a term during the past year, and we definitely are social entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The majority of our profits go back into, you know, not only paying for, you know, the employees, our overhead, but
mm-hmm.
they go back to the artists and purchasing
sure.
product and supporting artists and you know, just buying product from the community.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that you know, initially our mandate was to go, you know, national, international, and bring some of the artists here to share. But we found that it's better right now for us to just seek local artists. And so we've invested a lot actually back into the community from any profits that we have received.
Do these artists come to you, or do you go to them and seek them out?
Well, when we first started, we started with my network, which was about 30 artists. And so it was kind of people that I knew and then I was referred to.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we opened, we got more exposure, more marketing, more word of mouth. Mm-hmm. So we had artists come to us.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd set up meetings with artists, and I've met each of the artists in the boutique one-on-one. And we'd interview them, they'd interview us, and we'd decide if we were a good fit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're up to just over 100 artists now in the boutique. Yeah.
So the boutique artists, is that 100 for the boutique and the gallery?
Our gallery is really small. It's basically a hallway.
Mm-hmm.
Singing Winds Gallery. We named it after my daughter. That's my daughter's middle name. So, you know, we really liked her middle name. So we thought, let's use it for the gallery. So that includes the gallery as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gone through so much inventory that some artists that we started with at the beginning, we might not necessarily have some of their work right now.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's been rotating, and so it's been really, I think, really successful that way.
I was going to say that is how you would define success, wouldn't it? Somebody comes in looking for a particular artist. Well, I'm sorry, you don't have any of his or her work at the moment. You're going to have to sort of get on a waiting list.
Yeah. And there's quite a few popular artists.
Mm-hmm.
So we market them, and we have quite a few emerging and beginner artists as well. And so it's been a learning curve for us as well, because it's not like we can go to our manufacturer's retails book and say, well, this is the price of this beadwork, or this is the price of this art, or, you know, this is how it's sold before, because it hasn't been sold anywhere before. There's no kind of market data on what that would sell for.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been establishing our prices as well, and kind of determining the highs and the lows of something that we have in the boutique. Yeah.
Does your inventory sometimes attract other art dealers? I'm just curious.
We have talked, actually. We do quite a bit of trade shows, and just to feel out the community and get some marketing for the boutique. And so, we've been talking to the Mackenzie Art Gallery about having actually some of their art in our boutique. We haven't necessarily talked about having our product in their gift shop boutique, but we met them at one of our trade shows, and there was some interest, and so we still have to follow up on that, but we're so busy, you know, that but the potential is out there. We do get contacted, but it's just, I'm a sole proprietor, so, you know, we're focusing on our building our business and building the boutique here in Regina.
Is there room to expand the boutique or the gallery?
In our space, I think the room to expand would be through e-commerce and building the e-commerce website. And that's our goal for the next year, is building the e-commerce website. And now that we've established ourselves in the community, we've established ourselves with artists, we're still working on marketing. There's still a lot of people in Regina that haven't heard about us. But marketing is so expensive, that's a big factor in determining where we're going to market. So thank you for having us come, but which I'll say again at the end, I really love the space, and our landlady is is, you know, she supports the arts, mm-hmm. and she does that by making sure that the lease fee that we pay, you know, mm-hmm. matches that support. So we're not paying, like, mm-hmm. you know, out of our, what, an enormous fee. So, you know, I'd like to stay at where we are. And mm-hmm. even though it's a smaller space, mm-hmm. and doesn't really have room for expanding, like, to a bigger space, I just, you know, I love the location, mm-hmm. and I just love the atmosphere of the place. And mm-hmm. so I'd hope that we would stay there as long as we can. Yeah.
It is cozy.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
What sort of, let's talk about what all the, like, if somebody goes down there to visit the boutique, what are they going to find?
Well, you know, on a given day, definitely our inventory changes all the time. So sometimes we'll have something there that, you know, is similar to what was there last year. But, you know, we do have, well, when you walk through the door, mm-hmm. you'll see paintings.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see paintings on the wall. All of our walls are covered with artwork. You'll see beadwork for, you know, whether it's a barrette, earring, whether it is for power regalia or necklaces. You'll see breastplates. You will see clothing, ribbon shirts, and dresses, mm-hmm. mukluks, moccasins, some t-shirts, and purses, star blankets,
mm-hmm.
and we even brought in some product from South Dakota last year called Res Hoofs. They were boots that were painted on.
Oh, okay.
And so we, you know, we have repurposed purses, mm-hmm. that have fur on them. And so we have, like, it's been mm-hmm. really a wide range of product. We mm-hmm. even had art, you know, from some of the traditional portraits of chiefs, like mm-hmm. Sitting Bull, mm-hmm. to landscapes of Saskatchewan, mm-hmm. To a spaceship.
Of course.
I'm a little confused at one thing here, or just my ignorance here. What is a breastplate? Is that leather or metal, or what are we talking about?
The breastplates that we have in the boutique right now are made out of gun shells, 22s. That have been, of course, they're not shells anymore,
empty.
But
okay.
They're empty, mm-hmm. and so they're basically kind of what you could think of as
like chainmail or something
chainmail
like that.
That you would put in the front of your chest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm.
So we actually have a couple pieces that you can wear, you know, for. Whether you wear them as jewelry, whether mm-hmm. you wear them as protection, it's basically up to, you know, your choice. But we also have some that we framed,
mm-hmm.
yeah, some bigger pieces.
When you opened your store, did you find that a lot of media was covering you? Did you have?
Actually, we did. We do. We have a big supporter has been CTV and Indigenous Circle with Cris and Adjikute,
yeah.
And so we've had, when we had our grand opening, we had. So, of course, they came out. Mm-hmm. There we had a fellow come in from APTN who did a special on one of our designers, Tracy George Heese.
Mm-hmm.
And so he came and did a little fashion show, runway in the boutique.
Right.
And so
were you in Sask Fashion Week as well?
Yeah, we were. We got invited to come and do a few items on the runway. And we actually did. They had the show at Artful Dodger.
Oh, cool!
Yeah. So
I'm just looking at a picture of you in front of a buffalo or a bison. Is that? Do you have that in your boutique, or where was that picture taken?
We're only 800 square feet, so the bison would probably take up like a good quarter of it.
Yeah.
But no, actually, the picture that we have on our website is a picture of the Tatanka at Wanuskewin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, up in Sat by just north of Saskatoon.
I have been there.
Yeah. There's very few buffalo images or sculptures in the city, you know, and actually that's something that my husband and I, another project my husband and I are working on is getting more, is doing a book on kind of all the animal imagery in Regina and with a focus on the buffalo.
Yeah, and I'd have to say that if anyone has not been to Wanuskewin, it is a wonderful journey. Yeah, you know, it's not that far from the city, and you sure learn a lot.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's a great learning experience.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know? Yeah, yeah, it's a good place to. You can walk. There's some paths that you can walk, and you know, some good. They have some teepees set up. You know, on the paths, and there's actually some learning. I think they have some learning. Outdoor learning, reading.
Like there's a buffalo jump there.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
Yep. Haven't been there. Sorry.
Okay. a buffalo jump. You want to know what a buffalo jump is?
Yes.
Well, they used to get the herds of bison going and heading for a cliff, basically. And
once you get them
going, they just keep on going and over the cliff, and they finish them off at the bottom.
Yeah. Buffet.
Yeah.
Wow. Maybe that's where it comes from.
It's a great, there's a lot more to it. And there's a, you know, it's really interesting to hear, you know, what goes on there. So short commercial for Wanuskewin.
Well, you know, I know, I was in a teepee made out of buffalo, and nowadays most of the teepees are made out of canvas, but, you know, the teepee that I was in, I think it was like a 14-foot teepee, and I think they used 12 to 13 buffalo hides just to make that size of a teepee. And so, yeah, in order to make a, you know, a real large family teepee, you're going to need, you know, quite a number of hides. So I can see, you know, that was also a reason, you know, for having the buffalo jump, not just for the food for the community.
Oh, sure. And everything.
You know, everything that you could use from the buffalo, but definitely the hides, for, you know, were used for the teepees for our
homes. There was very little, if any, waste from the buffalo that they killed.
I can only think of two buffalo sculptures in Regina right now. The one in front of the Mackenzie Art Gallery. That one, and then the one in front of FNU, Bison Centennial.
Isn't there something in the FW Hill Mall?
Yeah, there's a buffalo images or sculptures in the Scar Street Mall there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but there's very few. I know there's some buffalo images or I forget what you call them. They're just kind of sticking out on the Albert Street Bridge.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, just off of...
on the bridge.
Parliament Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If you look when you're driving, or better yet, walking, you'll see the buffalo images there.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So we find actually quite a few. They're just really hidden. And, you know, and it's kind of, it's been really perplexing why the buffalo isn't more prominent as an image that the community has adopted as an image that that represents Regina. But I think there is some history there, especially with, you know, like if you go to the City of Regina website, they actually have on one of their kind of annual reports an image of all the buffalo bones, like thousands and thousands piled, I don't even know how many stories high it was, two or four stories high, you know, of just the bones, which, you know, isn't necessarily the most positive image when you think of the prairies, you know, to, you know, where, you know, we have this, you know, just kind of really bond with the buffalo in terms of our own history and just kind of that interconnectedness with them that, you know, that you would think that it would be to the forefront. But I think that, you know, for a lot of Native people, we're still kind of mourning the loss of that way of life and that connection with the buffalo. Yeah.
I don't know how shaky my history is here, but I think that was a deliberate government policy of the day to eradicate the buffalo, to basically take that away from First Nations people at the time.
Yeah, so that was a big.
There's
part
the food,
of it,
their
yeah.
way of life, everything that they made or owned or built or did was totally around the buffalo. So you get rid of the buffalo, and they did a pretty good job of making it difficult to live out here as First Nations.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and the thing is, you know, the you know, in a little bit of research that I've done, you know, is kind of like, where are the bones?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there was an art exhibit actually at Mackenzie Art Gallery, and I can't remember the lady's name, but she actually, part of her exhibit was smashing china cups, or what do they call?
The bone china.
Mm-hmm. Because actually a lot of the buffalo bones were ground into the material to make bone china.
Wow.
Oh. And shipped over, you know, to European countries. And, you know, so, you know, in a sense, it's, there's no real memorial here for the buffalo and for what happened. And so there's no real memorial for, you know, making, you know, just recognizing that history of Regina,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and just kind of being able to move on from that, to be able to heal from that, and to be able to acknowledge that, yes, the buffalo were a part of our life, but, you know, they're still running through us and our mm-hmm. blood memory, our, you know, DNA, you know, and so they may be gone physically, but mm-hmm. they're still with us, you know, spiritually, emotionally, mentally.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's a good way to, we think that's one of the reasons why we called our boutique Tatanka Boutique, was mm-hmm. to honor that,
mm-hmm.
that history and that memory, and to mm-hmm. gather strength from it. And, you know, like acknowledge the mourning, but we need, I believe in also the strength that we can gather from that memory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Education is a powerful thing, and I think that we all have to learn more about the real history of this country and how it started. And when mm-hmm. we find out more, like you say, then we can move on.
Yeah.
But I definitely don't think you just sort of turn your back on the whole thing and say, well, that's in the past. Let's you know, forget about that. We don't want to forget about that.
Mm-hmm.
That brings us to the bottom of the hour, end of our first half. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, Jolie has picked some music, and I'll let her talk about it when we come back, after we play the music. So we'll do the break, then we'll play the music. So,
okay.
All right.
Husbands and wives, and the bottle it hides, what's inside? Yeah, blacked out rage, sentence to the cage, put it down. Become someone else and go through hell. So put it down. Put it down. Put it down. We'll stop playing the clown and put it down. There is a devil deep inside, and the bottle is where he forgive yourself, be it someone else, put it down. And it's a new way, starting a day. So put it down.
And that was Hugh Poorman, Put It Down, from his CD, The Red Road. And you picked this, Jolie, so now your job is to tell us about Hugh Poorman and what the song is all about.
Okay, well, you know, we actually sell CDs and books in the boutique as well. And Hugh Poorman is I went to high school with him, and so we are selling some of his CDs in the boutique. We play the music, all the CDs that we have in the boutique, which is a really small selection. Like 3 to 5 artists that we have in the boutique, because we don't have that much space. But, Hugh Poorman, he's been in the music industry for a number of years, and actually is just working on a new album, and has gone down to Nashville to record it, and is working with youth. In his home community, I think it's Muskalgan or Muscapitan, and teaching, music to the youth in his community.
Nice.
So, we like to support local artists, and we like to support artists that support, youth as well. So, Hugh's voice is amazing. So, it's actually my son's request.
Oh, okay. I'm Jim Hutchings, and I'm here with Dutenda Chikukwa. We're talking to Jolie Big Eagle, who is the owner of the Tatanka Boutique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's Jolie Big Eagle Kakwetawe.
Okay. I have that here, but I thought I knew it. I'm glad I didn't attempt it. Kakwetawe.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
That isn't the way I was going to say it.
Took him a few times to master my name.
Yes. I didn't get it the first time, that's for sure. Oh, well.
But it's okay.
Yeah. I'm an older person. Give me a break. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
I wanted to ask you about your store and pricing and how you put the price on your items that you're selling. And I know that if you go to Aldo, you would get like a pair of earrings for $5 and then it would rust after like a month. Mm-hmm. But this is beading and this is work that's actually been taken some time to put out. I'm just thinking, like, if you do like a pair of earrings that have beading in it, it would take you a day or two to like just get everything intricate. And if you get the wrong pattern in, you'd have to take the whole line out and start again.
Yeah.
So the pricing actually matches the amount of effort you put into the work.
You know, we definitely seeked where, we have used our pricing based on fair trade.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there is a store here in Regina called 10,000 Villages.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Kind of using that model about fair trade.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when I do talk to the artists, I say, well, one of the things, especially when we have a new item coming in, and it's like, well, I have no idea what to price this at.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to the artists, and we find out how long it's taken them mm-hmm. to make something. And so we reflect that in the prices.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely are establishing our own market data
mm-hmm.
doing that, because sometimes something will sell
mm-hmm.
and sometimes it won't. And we have to look at, the boutique and say, well, is that a reflection of marketing
mm-hmm.
or is that actually a reflection of maybe the price is too high? Maybe, we sold something really quickly and we sold out.
Mm-hmm.
That mm-hmm. definitely, the price is too low.
Right.
Uh-huh.
You can't really, up something 100 to 200 or whatever percent just because you sold out of it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, determining the market price for an item, you know, is really challenging. Mm-hmm. And because we're establishing that mm-hmm. market price, you know, and so I've done some research and looked at other boutiques. I've gone on the internet and mm-hmm. I've looked at if there's anything similar that, mm-hmm. that something is being sold somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's crazy out there. Like, it's, when I go on the internet, you know, I've, like, for example, I've looked at hides, buffalo hides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the prices are anywhere from $400 for like 11 to 13 square foot hide
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for, you know, $400 to... 5,000.
Cool.
So, you know, it's just, you know, I guess,
mm-hmm.
you know, we do our best to make sure that it equals, you know, mm-hmm. how much work is the artist has put into that, mm-hmm. that piece.
And, yeah. I was going to say most of your artists, though, they're new artists. You know, they're not established, and an established artist has an idea of what his work is selling for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if somebody is coming to you and they're just starting to sell, yeah, you're in the dark.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially if it's something you haven't seen before. Like, you know, we've had some beaded bolo ties, and it's kind of like, okay, I've seen beaded bolo ties. They're the kind of the ties that you wear, like if you're a Western,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you don't want to wear a tie, but you'll wear like a little something around your mm-hmm. collar
yeah.
with the string.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was like, well, gee, I don't know. And, you know, so we talked to the artist. And, of course, sometimes the artist is like, what do you think it's worth? And I'm like, oh, my God, don't put it in my hands. And, you know, but I'm like, okay, well, this is what I think, mm-hmm. you know. And so, you know, we will price it, and then we will see what the sure. public thinks.
Do you spend much time sort of doing a little shopping around other boutiques and seeing what things that are similar are selling for? Or do you have time
to do that? Yeah. Well, I've definitely, especially if I hear something in the community, I know that, you know, for like, we have some earrings, you know, some of the beaded earrings where, mm-hmm. you know, I've seen like somebody comes in or I've talked to somebody, they're like, I bought the almost the same pair at Payless shoes. And I am like, you know,
come on.
Payless.
Like, okay, I can't.
There's no love in those Payless shoes, earrings. There's nothing.
Well, you know, and the thing
is, machinery in that.
If it's, you know, if it's reflected as a cheap price, I can only imagine when it's paid for whoever made it, you know, if it's priced at what, you know, like just an unimaginable low price, I can only imagine what that person received for it on the creation end,
yeah.
mm-hmm. you know, and having to be transported over here and to
exactly.
to go through the different avenues yeah. of somebody purchasing it and selling it, that, yeah. you know, it's yeah. just, it's not definitely not fair trade.
And without right? without having them in each hand and be able to see the difference in quality between each workmanship, materials, and all the rest of it, they could be just talking about something that, you know, thousands of them being shipped over from Asia.
Yeah.
That's so interesting that you say it, because when we always think about ourselves going overseas or going to another country, and then it's always like, the guy's always like, oh, you can always barter prices, barter, you know, mm-hmm. you can barter it down.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, they're taking time of their lives, like that's mm-hmm. their livelihood. And then yeah. you're trying, and then your guide is telling you, oh, get it down to $5 when mm-hmm. somebody's worth like $60 and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. we don't always think of like, they took the time out of their own labor where they could be doing something else, you know, and
yeah.
childcare. I mean, they're taking their time away from the kids to make this.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I know that, that I've seen some similar pieces, but you know, I can definitely see the design is definitely different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that there's, you know, some people that will just copy out of a book,
mm-hmm.
right? And whereas a lot of our artists, you know, they work hard on making their own designs
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And coming up with new ideas and being a little bit territorial about that design idea, whereas some, you know, in the beginning, I didn't notice different beadwork styles.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know, like, for beadwork, you know, the difference between, like, the colors and seed bead, two-cut, three-cut, Courtney bead, mm-hmm. you know, Mayuki, which is out of Japan, versus Czechoslovakian beads, which are Czechoslovakian,
mm-hmm.
You know. And just seeing the different styles of beadwork and thinking it's all the same, mm-hmm. but actually knowing when you see something, this design looks like so and so, and this design looks like this artist, and this design, you know, and being able to see that now, so that, you know, people that know beadwork, they'll come in and say, oh, is that, you know, so and so? And it's like, yeah, I can tell, you know, your beadwork, you know, so, you know, it's been, for me, it's been a really steep learning curve because, I'm not a beader. I dabble and I can bead, but, I find beadwork to be extremely difficult.
Yeah. Do you have any of your artwork on display that you made yourself?
I did initially. I sold the pieces that I did have when I had the time to create. And the only piece I have in the boutique that I showcase when we have the available spaces, I made my white wedding dress. And so I've displayed that and take orders for the... It's made out of white leather. Yeah, and actually that's why it's on our brochure, because I made my husband's outfit, and he has a ribbon shirt, and he wore leather pants, and I made my leather wedding dress. So I do display it at the boutique and take orders for outfits.
I have to ask you, how much would a white leather wedding dress cost a person if one wanted one to be commissioned for them?
Well, starting price is $1,600.
Wow, I'd say that's cheap.
Yeah, it is cheap.
Wow, just in terms of
that's
material,
just starting,
never mind. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know mine had some beadwork on it, and it was minimal. So if you add beadwork, then the price starts to increase.
It's a wedding dress. That's about the correct price for a wedding dress.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the leather and the beadwork and all the rest of it,
for $1,600, that wouldn't be for beadwork.
That's just, that's the bottom of the line kind of thing. Yeah. You know?
But people pay like $5,000 for a wedding dress at any store, or even more than that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So. Wow.
We're in the right area.
I'm just curious, how many artists you're representing at any one time?
We have 100 in the boutique. So, you know, there's been a few artists that we don't have and that have left the city. And so, I know one of our artists moved to BC. I talked to him, you know, once in a while on Facebook, and we hope to get some of his product, you know, shipped from BC now that he's over there. You know, but we don't have any of his product in. Another artist moved back home up north, and so we don't have any of his product. You know, we lost contact with him. You know, so it's still just over that 100. I'd say 105, but with a few artists that have kind of left the area, you know, we're still at about 100.
So are they primarily then in the city?
I'd say the majority are in the city. I'd say probably at least 75%.
Do you have anybody from what would be the furthest away somebody has come to you? Like you were just telling us about someone who's gone to BC after doing business with you here.
We actually have an artist by the name of Ron Horsfall. He's from Paiapot First Nation, just out of Regina here, 30 minutes north. And he lives in Vancouver, BC. So he heard about our boutique in the fall. And he came and interviewed us in the fall. I say he interviewed us because, you know, a lot of artists definitely want to sell their product with someone that they can trust.
Right.
And so a lot of times when we meet with artists, we do have that kind of mutual interview where we're interviewing them. We get to see what they have, but they're also interviewing us to determine whether or not they want to let us sell their product. So, so we met with Ron. He phoned us up and he said he was going to be in Saskatchewan. And we said, okay, you know, yeah, definitely. And so he, was beading for 9 years, as a form of healing. And so it had amassed a lot of beadwork, and he actually has a YouTube video. And so I went and looked at his YouTube video. That was kind of his resume. And I was like, why does he have so much beadwork? I've never seen anybody have this much beadwork, because as an artist, if you have something, you know, you sell it, right? You're not creating for your own, to display your own work in your own home.
Right.
Whereas, you know, Ron had created these pieces, but they had been all, each individual piece was a creation for some healing that he was going through, you know, over the 9 years. And now he said he was ready to let them go and let them be shared with the world. And so, you know, out of all the galleries that they have in BC, they have a ton of galleries in BC, especially highlighting BC First Nations art that he wanted to come in. And we're the only gallery that sells his work in Canada.
Wow.
Yeah.
What an honor.
It is an honor. And his work is amazing. He does this one stitch for beading called the Peyote Gourd Stitch that is a lot of work. And it's actually it's well sought after. And because so much time and effort is taken to do it, that he's one of the few artists in the boutique that actually does that work. I think there's only two or three artists that do that bead work, that type of bead work.
So I think it would be fair to say that you're developing reputation among artists, getting further and further afield, and so you must be doing the same thing with customers. You must have some clients that are some distance away.
Yeah, we actually started a guest book in the boutique. You know, we were talking about it. We're like, well, you know, yeah, let's do it. So we finally got a guest book because we were, you know, my husband also manages the boutique for me because I work full time, and I kind of oversee the operations. So my husband would go in there along with my son, and they'd be talking to people, and they'd be like, where are you from? And you know, and we'd have people come in from France, you know, from Italy, from New York, from Nunavut, of course, from BC, across Canada, from the States, New Zealand. We had somebody, you know, purchase one of a spear, a Maori person purchased one of our spears and went back to New Zealand. You know, and they use, you know, the kind of the spear in some of their ceremonies, right? So in our guest book, if you look at it, we've have people from all over the world come, and I know that there's people in the city that when they have guests come in from out of town, definitely like Robin Putra with New Dance Horizons, you know, she'll come and bring her dance repertoire, or she'll come and bring, you know, her guests to the boutique and say, this is, you know, this is Regina.
Wow.
This is Saskatchewan. Yeah.
How far along are you on the project to do things more in the IT world, like to make it,
for the e-commerce?
E-commerce, yeah.
You know, you would think that it would be so easy, because you know there are websites, like there's, you know, GoDaddy.com, there's Shopify, and you know, there's just a lot of resources on the internet. There's just logistics. Like, you know, I think the biggest one is when you have a product for sale and it sells online, you know, you need to be notified immediately to take that product off the shelf. You know, and so, you know, that's, I think, one of the logistics issues is getting the proper software and notification, so that if a customer is shopping in the boutique and they have they're carrying that one of a kind piece in their hand and it's just sold on the internet, how do we do that? We don't want to take everything and put it in the back, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's been our biggest headache or hesitance to move forward, is because you know, we just have those one-of-kind items. It's not like we have 10 items or, you know, 100 items or 1,000 items of one thing, right? Everything is unique.
Maybe some electronic way of making people who are visiting the website that a particular item is being examined by a potential customer.
Yeah.
And if they buy it, too bad for you. And if they don't, well, then it sort of goes back into more prominence, and then you can look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. So we're working with, we've talked to a number of designers and just waiting, you know, for something just to motivate us to the next step. Mm-hmm. Just because there's some of these logistical issues. And then the other thing is, you know, mm-hmm. we need to photograph every item, and it needs, mm-hmm. it can't just be, you know, like I know for our Facebook, we post some of our items on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we just photograph it on our couch. Mm-hmm. We have this nice, zebra, upholstered looking couch with a zebra design, you know, and so we just take it there. We take a picture of it. The lighting might be a little bit off. You know, it's not really e-commerce mm-hmm. worthy. Mm-hmm. It's not an e-commerce worthy picture, right? So, you know, and, you know, working out like, okay, who's going to take the picture, mm-hmm. first of
mm-hmm.
all?
Right.
Right. And so it's like, okay, well, we've got a camera now. We have a tripod. Now we have to figure out, mm-hmm. you know, where and when and yeah. how to take the picture.
Right. Mm-hmm. What kind of backdrop, yeah. and what kind of lighting, all
yeah.
that good stuff.
Yeah. And then somebody has to download it, mm-hmm. right, and crop it and edit it, right? And so, and do we use models? Do we not use models? Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of neck do we use? What, you know, mm-hmm. it there's all these factors
yeah,
to consider.
For the wearable items, yeah, I would think that's a... That's certainly a consideration.
Yeah. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. you know, I would think, you know, and probably we will get to a point where, you know, we're just have a white box. My husband made this white box out of just white tissue mm-hmm. and, you know, just taking pictures, you know, of the product like that. And so we've tried that a few times, and because we have had times where people have called in and mm-hmm. they've said, show me, you know, all your size 9 moccasins. And it's like, okay, so we go and we take pictures and we email it to them, and they're like, okay, you know, I like those ones. And, you know, here's our credit card, you know, you do the credit card transaction and include the shipping, and then we mm-hmm. ship it out.
So right? these would be like to other businesses that want to put it on their shelves?
These are just customers who have looked at mm-hmm. our Facebook right. page or mm-hmm. our website. Mm-hmm. Our Facebook page is more, we update the Facebook page more mm-hmm. than we have the website, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So somebody will see something on our Facebook and then be like, I like that necklace, you know, what would it cost to ship it? Mm-hmm. You know, and then there's some trust because we don't have that e-commerce. We're like, well, you know, we can ship it. We just need your credit card.
Yeah.
But we're real live people. And mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. so, you know, and sometimes, you know, it's just building that trust with our customers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Well, so
and I heard that you provide like information about the artist on the artwork or
yeah. Well, you know, it's right now it's we're working on that mm-hmm. in terms of that's part of our marketing. But I personally know each of the artists and have talked to each of them, so I know the background, and we try to share that story mm-hmm. about those pieces so that we can relay that to the possible customer.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, Jolie, thank you for so much for coming here and telling us about your boutique, your Tatanka boutique. It, I'm just awed by everything that you are accomplishing and attempting to accomplish for the artists in Saskatchewan and Regina, and I can only begin to imagine the sort of things that are going to be accomplished for our artists just because the boutique is there.
Well, thank you. And thank you for having me. And yeah, thank you for
the wonderful
opportunity. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness.